Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Point, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios in beautiful, snowy downtown Minneapolis. I'm Don Allen, and over in Studio V is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you this snowy evening?
Oh, Don, I'm just fine. You know, one should expect this if one has lived in Minnesota for any period of time. This is just normal. Maybe a tad early, but it varies from year to year, so... Donald, it's like we've got a lot this evening.
Yes, we do.
And I'll tell you what, you've got a person holding in the chat room. Why don't we get her on and let you chit-chat with her and let her get her message out, and then we can move into some breaking stories here,
okay.
Starting with the NAACP. So why don't you go ahead and introduce her and make inquiry.
Sounds good. On the line I have with us tonight, Ms. Rita Mays from the Minnesota Department of Health Diabetes Program. Ms. Mays, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you here. Now, I know, for full disclosure, because we have to share this with people, I'm actually collaborating with the Minnesota Department of Health, actually my company, and you guys are doing this kind of a health fair this Friday at the Neighborhood Hub located at 3210 Oliver on December 6th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., Can you give us a little bit more background and detail about what's going on with this?
Oh, I'd love to. We certainly would love to invite all of your listeners to attend. We're calling it the 2013 World Tour Information Session about Diabetes Prevention. And as you said, it's Friday, December 6th from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Neighborhood Hub, 3210 Oliver Avenue North. And it's a free event. What's behind it is last summer we spoke with a number of the communities around the metro area. We had community conversations with people in the African American, Latino, American Indian, and other ethnic groups that really wanted to tell us what they were thinking about diabetes and diabetes prevention. And what we heard was that people wanted to come to events like the one we're going to have on Friday to learn about diabetes and diabetes prevention, to get tested so they can find out if they have prediabetes or what is called higher levels of blood glucose than normal, and to learn what they can do to prevent type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
We also heard that people wanted to tell us their stories, and they wanted good food and good time. So that's what we're going to do on Friday.
Well, that sounds like a plan. I'm glad to hear that commitment from the Minnesota Department of Health about diabetes and working with each of the cultures and races here in Minnesota to kind of correct or turn this thing around. Now, the clinics, I understand there'll be heightened weight assessments, free blood pressure checks, and free blood glucose screening checks. And one thing I was really surprised and happy about is the free flu shots, because that we know a lot of people in our community don't have insurance, and they'll be able to go a place called Access Medical Center is going to be doing the free flu shots. And who are the other agencies involved as far as clinics, Ms. Mays?
Well, right. Well, we're certainly pleased with the collaborative with the Neighborhood Hub. And then the clinics are the Neighborhood Health Source in the North Minneapolis area, North Point Health and Wellness Center, Open Cities Health Center, and you mentioned Access. And we're also pleased to be partnering with the We Can Prevent Diabetes program and the AMPRS radio stations.
Yeah, and that's great. And also, in late breaking news here, Wilson Image Barbershop in North Minneapolis will be giving out in a contest, you put your name in a bowl, five free haircuts. So you'll be able Friday night, if you attend, if you need a haircut, put your name in the bowl. You might be the lucky person to go down. It's worth a $20 value, no cash value, of course, but he will honor that for haircuts for people that in the community that would like a haircut or would like to put their name in the bowl and have their name drawn. Before we leave, Ms. Mays, is there anything else that you'd like the community to know about this event?
Well, there's an opportunity to learn more about the We Can Prevent Diabetes program. We are looking for over 1,500 people to sign up for this free program that helps people lose weight, change their lifestyle, and really, really reduce their risk of getting type 2 diabetes. There are things they can do, and we want to share that information.
Okay, well, I appreciate you taking the time out here.
Don, before we let Ms. Mays go, I do have a question. Ms. Mays, how are you doing? Ron Edwards here, co-host with Mr. Allen. Just absolutely outstanding. Of course, I've been a resident of this community since 1945, and, periodically we have commitments, and then periodically we don't have commitments from government institutions and et cetera. And I've been watching fairly intensely the health department and certainly the issues that seem to be so acute disproportionately to communities of color. So I'm happy to hear the events that you're talking about and that you will be nurturing. It really caught my attention when you talked about healthy foods, so I know you were talking in terms of the events, but I know that one of the big things that the First Lady has been pushing for the last couple of years, Michelle Obama, is healthy foods and et cetera. And we really don't have that many vineyards here in the African-American community that provides the kind of healthy food that would help to, well, reduce the incidence or frequency of diabetes and et cetera. And then I also heard you talk in terms of the broadcasting and the advertisements and et cetera. What is there a fee that these stations require, or is this like a public service announcement?
Public service announcements are being made, yes.
So this is a public service announcement that you have, like this radio station. Well, there's an urban contemporary station. I've heard in the last couple of weeks promotions, if you will, as it pertains to diabetes. And I was pleasantly surprised because I hadn't heard anything before. So this particular urban contemporary station would be a station that would be providing this information as a public service announcement, or are they being compensated?
The Amper stations are providing this as a complimentary support for the program because they also are committed to dealing with diabetes and diabetes prevention. We're really pleased for the partnership.
Okay. Now, the purpose of our listening audience, Ms. Mays, could you just indicate and educate them on what is AMPRS and what is an AMPRS station?
Ah, thank you. It's the American – okay, you're testing me now. it's a public It's the American Education and Public Radio. So it's the public radios like KMOJ, KFAI, and other stations that really target specific language.
In other words, these are, in the case of the urban contemporary station KMOJ, these are stations that are nonprofit commercials, right?
Correct.
They are called and defined by the FCC as nonprofit commercial stations. That's what makes them so unique in serving the community. Okay, hey, appreciate it. I don't want to put you on the spot. I heard you laughed. I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't want to put your agency on the spot. But I think it's important that the community know that that these kinds of announcements and this really joint venture between AMPRS and the Department of Health is at play, and I think that's just great. And thank you for the time that you've taken this evening.
Thank you, and I hope to see all your readers, listeners there.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Well, that's excellent. It's great to hear that. As I said, Mr. Allen, I have heard a couple of the commercials, but because of my familiarity with AMPRS, and with these nonprofit commercial stations, I was wondering how much money some of them were extracting from the, you know, public coffers. I think we'll probably touch maybe with that later on. Don, I want to move into this whole situation with the public education, which is tied to what is just a classic breaking story here in the Twin Cities. As I first announced on this program about a month ago, there was to be an election on the 13th of December at New Salem Baptist Missionary Church, the facility pastored by the Reverend Jerry McAfee. And notice went out on November 13th under the signature of the state conference president, who resides in Rochester and also is the president of the Rochester NAACP, which is a pretty powerful group. Now, Minneapolis and St. Paul even have not been as active as we used to see them here when the NAACP was quite the juggernaut, if you will, and definitely Minneapolis has not been in the forefront of anything since young Booker T. Hodges stepped down as president maybe 10 months ago. And so I was interested when I heard and saw a letter that indicated there would be an election on December 13th. And so I did, as a good investigative reporter would do, I began an examination, and then I asked my colleague, Mr. Allen, to join me. And he has retrieved some significant information from the director of branches, a Reverend Ford in Baltimore, Maryland, where the NAACP's national headquarters is located. And I have to tell you, Mr. Allen, in the last 4 or 5 hours as a part of probing and digging, I am just shocked that this entire election that was to be held on the 13th of December is a fraud and is, in fact, illegal.
Yes.
And that apparently some money has been spread around by very powerful right-wing forces, primarily driven by big white money, Koch brothers, and some others. And it appears, Don, that this was put together at a meeting in Rochester, Minnesota, by a group known as the Monitors, which were active in this community about 15 years ago, were involved in the destruction of the Urban League at that time. And, of course, I'm very familiar with that. But I was quite shocked to find out that there was selective notification, Don, to the membership. The actual membership list that should have been used was never activated. And where these individuals made a terrible mistake, which has now led Reverend Ford in Baltimore to order an immediate investigation here in Minnesota, which could lead down to the shutdown of the entire NAACP apparatus here in the state of Minnesota, which would basically mean St. Cloud, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, if you will. The Duluth branch is no longer active. Sioux Falls is no longer active. But the scenario, Don, that I want to convey to our listening audience has to do with negating and neutralizing the African-American community in this great debate about public education, the future of the African-American and others of color, but particularly the African-Americans. It's, you know, something we've kind of been reporting on for a number of weeks / months and et cetera. But let me just give you a couple of things that have happened that are just frightening with respect to the kind of money that has been poured into some of our other organizations to pull off this sham. First of all, the selective letters announcing the election on the 13th, which I understand the Reverend Jerry McAfee, after being basically notified of significant inconsistencies relevant to the NAACP Constitution, that Reverend McAfee is prepared to cancel the elections and certainly work with the national NAACP in what is a sorely needed investigation of the monies, if you will, who have and are involved in the conspiracy to destroy the public education system, if you will, for personal and financial needs. One of the things that the public needs to know is that in the NAACP culture, really the secretary of the branch is probably one of the most powerful people, because it's the secretary who keeps not only the minutes, but the secretary keeps the membership list. And do you know, Mr. Allen, as we speak right now, that it has been verified by extremely reliable sources that the secretary of the NAACP branch, duly elected by the NAACP membership at the particular time a couple years ago, who is the keeper of the membership rolls, was never notified that there was an election, nor was her husband, who is the past president of the NAACP, Deputy Sheriff Booker T. Hodges, was not notified, and that there was a selective mailing. Now, my associate, Mr. Allen, has purchased, really, you know, an NAACP membership, and in the course of that began discussions with Reverend Ford in Baltimore. Am I correct, Don, on that?
You are absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards.
Okay. And Reverend Ford, for those of you that are, have been members of the NAACP, remember some of the great controversies, including the misappropriation of hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million, in education monies and et cetera about a decade and a half ago. Reverend Ford was not aware, and he is one of the first people that is to be made aware of any election involving any NAACP branch or state conference, as they are called. And my understanding is Mr. Ford, Reverend Ford, indicated to my colleague that he had no knowledge of the election here. Well, further examination has clearly shown that that is absolutely true, that this is an action, a conspiracy, really, Don, to position a NAACP that would be controlled by white conservative money to then support the position of the reformers, if you will, and then take the necessary action to begin to further erode the opportunity for education of the African-American students within the public education institution. And it also now involves reflections about the dismantling even now of charter schools. I mean, apparently there's a battle royal. Now, the incoming director and outgoing mayor of our city, R.T. Ryback, is extremely cognizant of this plan. This was a well-conceived plan. As I said, Mr. Allen, and to our listening audience, this plan was first conceived in Rochester, Minnesota. A significant amount of conservative, very conservative money was put into play. A couple of individuals were positioned, and I think I do have reason to believe that they misrepresented the facts and information to the Reverend Jerry McAfee, and I think that that will lead to the cancellation of the so-called election on the 13th of December. But the damage has been done, and the NAACP nationally has been severely injured by this conspiracy. By the way, we do have in our possession the letter. We have in our possession the post office box, which is being used to send out these controlled communications, if you will, as well as we have additional information relevant to the state conference president, Mr. William C. Jordan, Jr. of Rochester, Minnesota. So I just think it's important that the community knows that there is a great dispute now relevant to the so-called election, NAACP Minneapolis branch election, that was to take place on December 13th at the church of the Reverend Jerry McAfee. I just think that Reverend McAfee was greatly misled by people that that certainly he trusted and believed were conveying the right information. I'm hearing the name of Nick Mohammed as being the man who was expected to be positioned as the new incoming NAACP president. This is not the first time that that name has emerged or this scenario has been played out. About a year and a half ago, when there was an attempt to remove Booker T. Hodges because he was considered to be too black, some of these same names, if you will, came into play. And folks out there who listen to us know just who we're talking about. And if they're interested and they want to challenge, you know, they're welcome to pick up the phone and call. In fact, why don't you, I'm going to conclude on this NAACP. Why don't you give the number, Don, So if there are any questions on what is clearly a significant fraud driven by powerful white conservative money to take control of the NAACP of Minneapolis, phone lines are open.
Yes, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904, and the lines are wide open. Mr. Edwards, you are exactly on point on the NAACP information that you're giving out, because I was led online and received a certified email from the headquarters of the NAACP citing Article 4 membership prerequisites. I also was emailed the link and the PDF for NAACP Branch Elections Procedure Manual, which duly states, notice in September, each branch should mail one notice to each member in good standing, postmarked at least 10 days prior to the September meeting, listing the time, place, and date and purpose of the September-October meetings and the time. And such meetings and elections should be in one or more local newspaper of general circulation at least 10 days before any election, period. Bylaws for units, Article 9, Section 2, Subsection G. And they actually have it mapped out in a format exactly how you're supposed to send it, Mr. Edwards. And none of this was done. I'm absolutely positively sure.
Let me concur with you and with evidence that evidence is present
and
structured in such
caller.
A way.
We have a caller.
Well, let's get the caller. Answer. Caller's in for it. Let's get the caller. Caller?
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please, sir.
Oh, am I on the air now?
Yes, you are.
Okay, well, yeah. I had a question. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, I really appreciate you guys' programs and the way that, you know, you guys are really dedicated to kind of really look at this Twin Cities area and try to, you know, make this an equitable place for all people. I really, you know, first of all, I wanted to say that. Mm-hmm. But as far as the NAACP, if, you know, it's a longstanding, strong organization that has done many great things for African Americans over the years of their existence. And if they have such a system in place with bylaws, and why aren't these things followed? I mean, if they have, aren't their officers, I mean, entrusted to follow their bylaws and to follow the rules and to do the rules of the organization? How do you guys think this comes about?
Well, let me go back, sir. I, you know, obviously you may have just tuned in. Let me go back to square one. First of all, the letter dated November 13th, 2013, was sent by the president of the Minnesota-Dakota State Conference. Under the Constitution of the NAACP, state conferences in each and every state of the 50 states and a couple territories, Puerto Rico and et cetera, has what is called a state conference. And it is there under the state. It's kind of like a general assembly. And so all the branches in your state are a part of the state conference. The letter of November 13th that was sent out indicating there would be an election on December 13th at New Salem Church in North Minneapolis was sent out and signed by the president of the state conference, who is also the president of the Rochester branch. That takes care of your question with respect to constitutional responsibility. Mr. Jordan, William C. Jordan, sent that letter out. He sent it, and I will do this, because we had been asked by the national office to suppress some of the evidence. But it was sent from a post office box in Rochester, New York, post office box 6472. And, of course, we also have the registration number. Now, once the state conference president sends out a letter, which was a selective mailing, by the way, because to your other question, the former president of the state branch, of the Minneapolis branch, Booker T. Hodges, who is a deputy sheriff in Dakota County, and his wife, who is still the secretary of the branch, were never notified. Mr. Allen also indicated to you that the date of notification is at least 2 months before said election. In other words, it should have went out in late September.
But aren't members also to be notified? I mean, members?
A select group of members were notified, sir.
Wow.
That's the only way that we happened to find it, that I happened to find it out.
Wow.
The number of members is no more than 30. And they
in the Minneapolis
were, NAACP. Well, let me just go this say this to you. The Constitution and bylaws of the National NAACP maintains that you must maintain an active membership role of at least 50 dues-paying members in good standing.
Correct.
The Minneapolis NAACP is right on the abyss of having basically no more than maybe 65 or 70 paid members in good standing. The key is good standing. Now, one of the things that I am authorized to talk about is that both Mr. Hodges and his wife are life members. Now, in the NAACP pecking order, life members, quote-unquote, are the cream of the crop. Now, interesting enough, when a life member does not get a notification of an election, you have to take a look at a selective process. Now, there were a couple of other individuals who are life members who are part of the group that was going to be involved in this sham who got notification. One of the things that Reverend Ford will do upon his arrival in Minnesota at some point in time is to ask for a full examination of who it was received the letters. Okay? We can already tell you that it was a very selective group. And I repeat again for those that are listening, when you have two life members who also happen to be the past president of the branch and the current secretary of the branch, because technically, constitutionally, procedurally, you can do nothing with regards to an election unless you have membership list. The membership list was going to, in fact, it already actually had been, was going to be falsified. In the letter sent out on November 13th, the letter says the following. The election will commence at 5 o'clock. Registration from 5 to 6, and from 6 to 7, the election will take place and officers will be installed. You can't do that. That's a violation of the Constitution. Yeah, you cannot do that. That is an absolute violation. It's one of the reasons that Mr. Allen was put in contact with Reverend Ford. And I repeat again, Reverend Ford is the director of branches of the NAACP.
Mm-hmm.
All branches report to him. He is the overseer. And when that letter came out from the state conference president, Mr. Jordan, William C. Jordan in Rochester, Minnesota, obviously we've got a serious problem. So your question is well crafted, sir,
My
responsibility and Mr. Allen's responsibility is to respond.
Your response. I just have one more question. I don't want to take up a lot of time. In a city the size of Minneapolis, and I'm going to conclude St. Paul because I grew up in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And in growing up in this area, it's always been the Twin Cities. I mean, the area has always been, to me, they were very just interchangeable as I grew up in this area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for us to have that few members in that organization, do you have an explanation for that? Your perspective on
that. Oh, but I do have an explanation,
Hearing it.
All right. The explanation is that, unfortunately, since 1999 and 2000, because of problems with fraud, theft, and et cetera, of education funds, because this branch was endowed with a $1 million federal grant to deal with the program known as Leave No Child Left Behind.
Wow.
And what happened, people got greedy, they got corrupt, and there was almost a 10-year battle with regards to what happened to the money. In fact, the money was shifted from the NAACP Minneapolis branch to a private enterprise, okay, which operated out of a former bank building on Plymouth Avenue. And so what began to happen, the corruption began to eat away at the anticipation and enthusiasm and commitment to be involved.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I have to tell you, sir, there has not been a regular meeting of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP in 10 months.
Mm.
They have not had a regular meeting in 10 months.
Yeah, that's appalling, to say the least. Well, keep doing what you guys are doing. I mean, I don't know what, but I mean, until we can rally our troops. Oh, I guess I have one more question, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
I've also noticed, you know, being a lifelong resident of this area for over 60 years, I see, you know, an influx of a lot of people from different cultures, you know, particularly Southside Minneapolis, you know, one, you know, Somali, Mexican, Hispanics, but you know, for some reason the Somalis seem to be really able to get a foothold in the area. And I mean, I've been here all my life.
Uh-huh.
And when I was a kid, I believe we had a foothold in the area.
Mm-hmm. We did. We did at one point.
I really believe that. I mean, as far as the churches, as far as the businesses, we even had a credit union here in South Minneapolis that's right, individuals put together.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
Let him ask this question. Go ahead and ask your question, sir.
So how, you know, I mean, the people of Somalia, and I'm certainly not singling out anyone, and I certainly applaud anyone that can move their people ahead.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that's obviously a positive thing. But how we, as African Americans, it just seems like a serious regression as opposed to
You're absolutely correct, and a lot of it has to do, again, with the deterioration of leadership within the community, with poor decision-making, very, very poor decision-making, which has led us to the situation, and I do believe you read the Spokesman Recorder, which has led us to a situation that for the first time in 33 years, we have no African-American on the Minneapolis City Council, and for the first time in 27 mm-hmm. years mm-hmm. in St. Paul, we have no African-American on the St. Paul City Council. Now, that should be frightening and chilling to
it
the African-American
to
community.
Yes, to me.
Yeah.
And what can we do?
Well, one of the things that is said about us by Somalis and Asians and also Latinos / Mexicans is that we do not know how to stick together and that we are easily separated for a variety of reasons in which that takes a whole nother show to go into.
Sure.
A lot of it has to do with our values, with our honesty, if you will, and with our decision-making and with our alliances. And other groups are analyzing us, and they've been here a much shorter time than we, okay? Mm-hmm. We've been here since Minnesota was a territory, and there's not many other those groups that you've talked about that can state that. We've been here since this was a territory. Minnesota was a territory. And yet the regression that you just talked about, sir, is a reality. We have no political base in either one of the city halls in Minneapolis or St. Paul.
Well, with that being said, I guess all I can say is, you know, in light of our current circumstance, I mean, we need each other more now
than ever before.
Than we ever have.
That's right.
And
all
I
right.
I hope that we can, you know, things like your program and the Spokesman, and we have to rise again. So,
sir, I deeply appreciate that, and I think that needs to be a rallying call. We need to rise again.
Well, let's hope so.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Allen, interesting observation. Tough questions by the gentleman.
Yeah, and I was going to tell you.
Call number again in case we got anybody on the line.
Well, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, Mr. Edwards, I was going to tell that gentleman, who obviously sounds like he grew up in South Minneapolis, I'm sure he remembers Crown Records on the corner of 4th and 38th Street and Crown Barbershop and Mr. Rubin's Grocery Store that sat there for years, you know, all my life, on 4th Avenue and 38th Street in South Minneapolis, and those other black businesses that were very
mm-hmm.
profitable and just, you know, did very well. And today we can't, you know, we'd have to look high and low to find things like that. So,
and I must always remind our listening audience, because we don't have a historical museum, over $3 million was allocated for the museum. It never happened. The money can't be accounted for, and we have no museum. You know, let's say it's 1927. It's Minneapolis, Minnesota, and St. Paul, Minnesota, the Rondo area, and over here in Minneapolis, it's North 6th Street. Do you know that in Minneapolis, along North 6th Street, which is Olson Highway, that's Highway 55, the Floyd B. Olson Memorial Highway, that we had 12 blocks of commercial businesses, 6 blocks on each side of the street. We had cab companies. We had entertainment centers and et cetera. We had eateries. We had a heck of a nightclub, which brought in all the top Negro artist of the day, if you will. The largest black employer at that particular time, that date, 1927, was a laundry. Now, I'm talking about in the days, I'm talking about industrial laundry that had business with the Old West Hotel, the Nicollet Hotel, and at least two of the major hospitals here in Minneapolis that ultimately was sold to what is now Gross Brothers Chronics in 1935, mm-hmm. employed 200 Negroes.
Wow.
It's 1927. They're employing 200 Negroes at a time when the black population in Minneapolis was about 3,200 and in St. Paul was about 2,900. Okay? And Duluth, unfortunately, had lost about 600 African Americans after the lynchings in 1921. But I'm just saying the gentleman who said he's in the 60s, if you will, is absolutely on point. But we have lost that history because we don't have any reference point, you know. Mm-hmm. And certainly, really, and you know, we can't expect the white folks to provide our history to us. I mean, not an accurate description. I mean, think about it. It's 1927, 1924, 1923, 1935, and we have 12 blocks of commercial businesses and such. We lost all of that by 1952 with urban renewal. But the fact of the matter is we were never allowed to recoup, if you will, to reestablish, if you will. And we really never received the remunerations and compensation for the loss of our businesses and our properties.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's not good. And I'm just looking around here at some of the stuff that's online as far as looking at Minnesota and the demographics and what's going on. It seems like they pretty much pigeonholed some of the minority ethnic communities into areas that are almost 275%, Mr. Edwards. I said 275% below the federal poverty line, which is absolutely ridiculous. But, yeah, I'm glad that caller called in. He kind of, you know, shook me on some things, too, looking at these this information from Mr. Reverend Ford on the details that are laid out as far as what each candidate has to do, how many signatures each candidate has to get to even be presented. And it's all right here in black and white. I mean,
let me do this because obviously Mr. Allen and myself have been in consultation and commiseration. Is it a fact that yesterday, Mr. Allen, that the Reverend Gail Ford, Director of Branches for the NAACP from his Baltimore office, indicated to you that the election of December 13th is already illegal?
That was actually today, Mr. Edwards.
All right, then.
Yes,
okay.
And I actually talked to him, and I talked to a Ms. Brown because he was pretty busy, but they did lead me to the steps. I says, you know, I told them that I've been an active member of the NAACP since 2008 when then-President Duane Reade consulted with myself and a gentleman by the name of Lenny Chisholm to do some capacity building and doing some meetings that we did for almost 3 or 4 months. And I told him after that I didn't hear from Mr. Reed again. And the last thing, you know, and I was just kind of wondering what was happening. And I said, is it fair to say that this particular election is out of line with the bylaws and the election procedures of the NAACP? And the simple answer was yes. And then
I concur. Absolutely.
I actually have the paper where I don't know if it was Ms. Brown or he who circled each of the steps in under A, general considerations, B, nominations, C, speech in support of candidates, D, election of candidates and supervisory committee, and E, preparations for the election by election supervisory committee. So basically, Mr. Edwards, well, I don't have to say basically. What they told me is that the NAACP, being the strong organization like our last caller just said that they are, has a procedure to circumvent any of this tomfoolery that's trying to be pulled here in Minneapolis against this weak black community. Well, a few weak African Americans in our community who are selling out to this reform stuff. And so with that said, I mean, it's clear right here, and now I am a member of the NAACP, and
I had told them, Mr. Edwards, if people go to the NAACP sign up, or the homepage for the Baltimore, you know, the headquarters office, and you look for the Minneapolis branch number 4050, it will give you a number of 822, which has been disconnected for the last 4 years. I've been calling that number for the last 4 years. It's been disconnected.
But for the purpose of transparency, the number is 822, and then there are four more numerical numbers, correct? It's just not 822. It is the phone number of 822, which is a Southside number, a Southside prefix. Mr. Allen discovered after talking to the telephone company, phone's been disconnected. That phone's been disconnected for over 4 years. Is that correct, Mr. Allen?
That is correct, sir. That phone number has been out of commission for 4 years. And so the number is 822-8205. That has been out of commission for a very long time. And
that is the number of the NAACP office for our listening audience. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the new number, which they don't have on their website, is 612-759-1888. And so I called that number, and they are aware, Mr. Edwards, but they're kind of embarrassed that they said you'll probably have to leave a message on a voicemail because there's no one answering that number. And so I did call that number, and no one answered. And so I told them, as someone that wants to get involved and learn more about the NAACP,
let me do this. I think it's done. I'm going to, because you're in Studio A where our technical communication equipment is. This number, let's call this number. This is the number of the state conference president and also president of the Rochester facility. His last name is Jordan. His number is, got the pencil there, 507-281-3588. Let's see if that phone is answered. And maybe Mr. Jordan can help us understand the purpose and the genesis for his letter of November 13th.
Okay, we're calling that number right now as we speak. It is dialing.
And his name is Jordan, William C. Jordan.
Hello,
he's a junior.
Mr. Jordan?
Hello? Yes.
Hi, you're live on the air with the Blog Talk Radio show On Point, the Ron and Don show, and we were talking about the NAACP. My name is Don Allen, and my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. I just joined the NAACP 3 days ago and had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Ford, Reverend Ford, and the Director of Membership, because I was having a very hard time getting in touch with representatives from the Minneapolis chapter 4050.
The branch,
4050. And we just had a few questions and wondering if you could help us and our thousands of listeners here in domestically and internationally, you know, understand these procedures as far as what the bylaws and what the election information has, which I have in front of me, and what's going on in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Are you still with us, Mr. Jordan?
Okay.
I am. Here. You hear me?
Okay.
Yes, we can now. Thank you, sir.
Here's what the Pacific Inquiry is that we're making from this end, from our studios. On November 13th of this year, a letter went out under your signature indicating an election on 13 December, 30 days hence at that time, at a church called New Salem Missionary Baptist Church, in which the pastor is the Reverend Jerry McAfee, and it indicated a procedure and et cetera, which in consultation with Reverend Ford indicates that procedure violates the Constitution and bylaws of the NAACP. Have you had a chance to talk with Reverend Ford?
No, I have not. Well, I've talked with him at different times, yes.
Okay. Well, have you talked to him in the last 10 days?
About this particular matter, I've really worked through the regional director.
And that is whom, if you could share with us?
Cameron Middlebrook.
Okay, and is that a man or woman, male or female?
Male.
Okay, and Mr. Middlebrook is located where, Baltimore or St. Louis or where?
Currently he's in Iowa.
Oh, Des Moines, Waterloo?
I'm not sure what city he's in.
Okay. He's the regional director reporting to Reverend Ford, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, will he be here to supervise the election of December 13th, or will you be supervising that election?
I will be.
You'll be supervising the election on the 13th of December. Has the elections committee been set up, or have they been operating for some period of time?
Yes, they have been.
Okay, and those are members selected from the branch, right?
No, it's really members selected from the state conference, because this election is not being conducted by the branch. It's being conducted by the state conference.
Okay, this is as your letter stated, this is a special election. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And what shall be the requirements of eligibility for those vying for, because are there a multiplicity of offices or just the office of president that is being contested here?
What do you mean by being contested?
Well, you're having an election, right?
Yes.
That's what your letter of November 13th says. You're having an election. Are you electing officers, which would include president, or are you just electing a president?
No, we're electing officers.
Okay, which would include a president. Is that correct?
Yes, which will include the president.
Okay. Could you just share with us when the petitions for office were received by your election committee?
Well, I don't have those dates in front of me, you know, right at the moment. We had special interest meetings that we sent to membership that's in the Minneapolis branch. We've been advertising this now for over 6 months.
Okay, could we ask you the method of the notification?
Well, it's been advertised in different media. It's been sent out to the membership list that currently exists, and I have received numerous calls and communication from members that are in the Minneapolis area.
Okay, Ms. Jordan, if I could ask you this question, I just have a couple more questions. Obviously, I'm also cognizant of the NAACP structure. Now, who has, at this very moment as we speak here, who has custody and control of the membership list? Are you able to tell us that? You know what I'm talking about, right?
The Minneapolis membership list.
Yes, because this is the Minneapolis branch. There's no Twin Cities NAACP. This is the Minneapolis branch, correct? Again, referring to your letter of November 13th, right? So the eligibility and et cetera has to be drawn from the membership list, right, even though you indicated that the oversight committee is comprised of individuals from, I guess, St. Paul, St. Cloud. Do you still have a branch in Duluth?
We do.
Okay. So who has custody and control of the membership list?
The state conference secretary.
The state conference secretary. Okay. Hmm. So this is kind of a situation in which the Minneapolis branch has kind of been put in receivership. I mean, is that the way this is working?
It hasn't
this
been
is a special election, according to your letter, right?
Right.
This is a special election.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Correct? Okay.
That's correct.
And so the state conference secretary, could you name that person for us, sir? Is that person, what is
no,
the name of that person?
I would not name that person.
Oh, you will not
no,
name
I
the person. Okay,
name
all right.
That person.
Okay, but this person is shown on the roster as the state conference secretary. Is that correct? And that person, let's say she, has the membership list of the Minneapolis branch. Who did she receive that from?
Well, that's really, I think you're getting outside of
the
any scope? Questions
okay.
you
okay.
may have. Yeah,
no problem. But this is not a secret election.
Reverend Ford didn't answer those questions for you?
He did not.
I didn't talk to Reverend Ford. I haven't talked to Reverend Ford.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you started out by saying you talked to Reverend
no,
Ford.
No, there was no. You need to listen distinctly to the two voices. That was Mr. Allen, my colleague. This is Mr. Edwards.
Yeah,
I've not talked to Reverend Ford.
And
okay.
Reverend, this is Mr. Allen, and Mr. Ford, Reverend Ford, knew nothing about this election, and he did not know who the election supervisory committee chair was. He didn't know who the general membership chair was. He did not know who the watchers, observers, and challengers were going to be for this. He did not know who was running for president, vice president, second vice president, secretary, assistant secretary, treasurer, are members of the executive committee or the assistant treasurer. And he suggested that I try to contact someone here locally and get this information, which should be public information. And if I have some issue with the manual on branch election procedures, to bring that up or contact the Baltimore office directly. And I told him I did not know, again, who the election supervisor committee chair was. And if I wanted to run for one of these positions, I did receive the NAACP candidate's consent form. And I would not know where to submit that, nor would I know any of the five people that are in the NAACP, because there is not a public list anywhere online. And as far as the advertising there, Mr. Jordan, I kind of just mistakenly stumbled across some people next to me in a coffee shop having a conversation about a NAACP meeting on the 13th. I've not seen this in the white media. I've not seen this in Insight News, Spokesman Recorder, online or in print, WCCO, Channel 11, Channel 5, Channel 4, Channel 29, or Channel 20, or Channel 9. So there was some concern, and, you know, we've had listeners calling and you know, asking us for lists of where this was advertised at least 10 days before the election in the local media, and who is the chair of the at-large executive committee. Who is the chair of the tally sheet and blackboard individuals that handle that, and also the appeal for a new election. And one question that I have just quickly here, when was the appeal for the new election filed with Mr. Ford?
You need to talk with Mr. Ford about that.
Well, he
okay,
doesn't
all right,
have.
All right.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. I mean, okay, because I guess you've referred us back to Mr. Reverend Ford, actually to the Reverend
yeah.
Dale Ford, and we can appreciate it. Can I ask this question? I'd appreciate it if you'd be able to answer this one. This is going to be at a particular venue, which is, of course, an African American church located in North Minneapolis, and I assume you know where the church is at, and the minister is very well known, etc. Have you talked? Or did you talk and negotiate with the minister for the utilization of his facility for the election of December 13th? And do you know who the minister is of that church?
No, I do not. It was just a committee member is the one who set up the venue.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're not aware of who the pastor is of that particular venue?
I am not.
Okay. Mr. Jordan, we want to thank you, appreciate your candor and receiving our call at this time of night, and hopefully we'll have a chance to meet, and we'll certainly have a chance to confer. Want to thank you again, sir. Good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, Mr. Allen, are we disconnected there?
We are all the way disconnected. Damn. Okay. I thought, okay. Damn, Mr. Edwards. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, you know, phone lines were open, opportunity for people to call in and ask questions about this. We hope that this information has been of some value to the Reverend Jerry McAfee, who the state conference president didn't even know of his existence. I mean, here's the thing. The NAACP is a very religiously orientated organization, even more so than the Urban League could ever be. You just don't go into a black minister's church and hold anything without serious and significant consultation, okay? You you don't send a secondhand person to do it. You do it yourself, because what Mr. Jordan said to us, this was a special election, and I was not being anything other than concise and precise when I said that this clearly is a receivership election, because you must have placed the NAACP Minneapolis branch in receivership if the state conference secretary has the membership list. The only way that you could have gotten that was by ordering the current secretary to have surrendered that, and that would basically lead to an appeal to the national board. But, you know, once we got into we need to go talk to Reverend Ford, like we haven't talked to Reverend Ford, like we don't know Reverend Ford, and when we were told that the name of the state conference secretary would not be revealed to us, I mean, that's public information. And, in fact, I would encourage my colleague, Mr. Allen, to call Reverend Ford first thing tomorrow morning or Ms. Brown and indicate that we were refused the opportunity to know the name of the person who now controls the membership list.
Yeah, exactly.
Because here's what I was just told about 2 hours ago by very reliable sources. Ms. Hodges has in her possession the membership list. Now, I mean, so what? I don't understand what's going on, because there's never supposed to be a duplicate membership list or two separate membership lists.
Yeah, I mean, it's Mr. Edwards, this is on tape for the record. Okay.
Yes, it is. Upon demand. Yes, yes.
Upon demand. And people are going to have to listen to this to understand that this thing stinks. This thing, I mean, he didn't have names for any of the people that you're supposed to have names for. The National Education Officer, all these people that, according not to Don and Ron's specification, but to the NAACP Manual on Branch Election Procedures.
Yes,
okay?
Sir. And the Constitution
and
bylaws of the NAACP,
yes.
National.
Yes, exactly. And we have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
Let's try to get him down, and if we have to run over, let's do that. Go ahead, caller.
Go ahead, caller.
How are you guys tonight? How y'all doing?
Hey.
Real good.
Bro?
What's going on, man? What's the question?
Let me say, of course, let me leave it to y'all to shine a light on the happenings and the going-ons here in Minneapolis. The firings of the Minneapolis police officers is a bit overdue. As I said to Don earlier, you know, what choice was she left? You know, I don't think if she had not been insulted by being called a effing lesbian, would she have even taken any type of actions, knowing that because of the union, dealing with the police unions, that these guys would liable to get their jobs back. So I don't think she did it because she didn't want any racist or bigoted officers and that wouldn't be tolerated, that any such behavior. I think she did it because she was insulted, and she herself may very well be on her way out the door if Mayor-elect Hodges go ahead and does bring in a new police.
Well, I'm glad you brought that question up, and I need to respond because certainly I was quoted in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, but I always want to make sure that our community has the utmost information. First of all, I don't know that she will touch doing anything to Chief Jhené Harto. The political atmosphere isn't correct, but the other problem is that it's kind of funny, too. The person that she had in mind to bring in from Seattle, Washington, to succeed Chief Jhené Harto, this is exclusive here, Don, in this part of the country, was demoted 2 days ago from assistant chief back to captain. And so I have to tell you, my brother, that a person who's just suffered that kind of crisis is not going to look very attractive to the 13 members or the mayor of the city of Minneapolis. So I think that Jhené will be here for a while. The other thing, let me just say this to you in all fairness. I think you're going to find out that the Police Federation is not going to defend these two individuals. I'll just leave it to you like that. They are not going to defend these individuals. They're going to have to acquire their own legal counsel. And also they're going to use the veterans preference issue as opposed to civil service, which then brings the state into play to appeal their termination. The Federation, I don't think the Federation, because of some circumstances, including a letter asking those officers to apologize to their fellow black officers and et cetera, was rejected out of hand in late May of this year. I just don't think the Police Federation is going to I don't think they're going to represent these individuals, and technically they don't have to.
Well, Mr. Edwards, we certainly hope that they have the certain where it all not to represent these type of individuals, because they are certainly there. It isn't just rumor. We certainly heard these individuals be racist and bigoted.
Yes, sir.
But then again, I remember on Mayor Belton when she too had a rogue police officer that was proven to be rogue himself. She fired him, and the Police Federation Union got him his job back. So,
oh yeah.
I want to see them do the right thing, but I'm not so optimistic that they will do the right thing, because again, this is a union, and I'm not mad at the union. I've been in a union before. They're supposed to protect you, but when you are wrong, when you are proven to be bigoted, you know they should not represent these guys. But I'm a little afraid, Mr. Allen, that they will.
No, Edwards.
Because
this is Edwards.
I'm sorry, Edwards.
Yeah.
That they will, because. This is just how the police union rolls.
And, yeah, but I have to disagree with you. There's information that I'm very much aware of. I'm aware of the letter. I'm aware of the rejection of the letter by the two officers, which actually allowed the union to take the position that they would not represent them and that they needed to get their own counsel. But time will tell. They have 60 days to appeal to the State Veterans Board to reverse the action of the chief, and you know, let's just wait. Let's see what happens.
I think it also it sucks the fact that these officers will continue. They have been paid already throughout this investigation, and they will be continued to be paid throughout another investigation throughout the 60 days period that they're allowed to. Appeal. So, you know, the fact that we're continuously paying these bigoted officers is, you know, it's just disgusting. And we need to change the operations of how the union is protecting these officers and how these officers are protected when indeed they have been proven to have been found to committed some type of crime or of that things of that nature.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, let us suggest to our political leadership that they should work on that. Oh, that's right. We don't have any representation in City Hall. I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, maybe we can get, maybe we can get the new NAACP when he gets this act together, or the Urban League, or someone to do that. You know what I'm saying? And I think that folks like us should be right there encouraging them whenever we can find them in a meeting.
Well,
right,
I doubt if either one of us would be invited, but I appreciate you guys. Keep up the good
all
work.
All right. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Don, that's pretty much rapid, man. I know we're into the stream and et cetera. I think it's been just an outstanding meeting, and a meeting in the sense of really that's what we kind of came together to do, particularly our discussion with Brother Jordan out of Rochester, Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. We're going until 10 o'clock, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I didn't know. Oh, okay.
He didn't
say anything, Don. Didn't know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The phone lines are open. Let's encourage it. And even though we probably should have got our last caller and continued some dialogue,
but the
phone lines are open. You know.
Yeah.
Get that number again.
347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, there was a copyrighted story on the OurBlackNews.com from local white boy that said there were going to be 700 to 800 African American men and women at the stadium tomorrow morning working.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Right now, the workforce on the stadium is at exactly 157 individuals, all white. That does not even begin to approach the threshold of 32%. That Commissioner Kevin Lindsay of the State Human Rights Department and others said was going to happen, or our good friend, Mr. Tittle, if you will. What I'm hearing, Don, from sources inside of the Sports Facilities Authority, Vikings and others, is that 700,000 has been withdrawn, that we've been, you know, talking about and kind of signifying about. Yeah, I understand it's been withdrawn.
It's
no longer available, and I'm hoping that our leaders will be able to explain to those of us that, you know, certainly don't walk in the big shoes of power, what the hell happened. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Well, the $700,000 is no longer available.
Well, I think that's absolutely a gorgeous, wonderful thing because it was a waste of money. It's like someone giving me $10 and me throwing it out the window because it would have been no use to me. And it wouldn't have been any use to the community because I had this conversation, Mr. Edwards, not too far from where my home is a, what do they call that, a temporary agency. And I happened to stop by there one day to actually pick up a friend who was going with me downtown Minneapolis. And he said the main problem that they have there is that they have trained people on the bench. But these companies uh-huh. don't have the resources to come in and take 10 or 15 carpenters, 20 plumbers and people like that. And so I was talking to him because he had no idea. He doesn't follow, you know, really what I do. He's just, you know, buddy needed a ride, so I gave him a ride, being a good Samaritan. But, you know, he says, you know, with $700,000, he says you could go to a plumbing company, a contracting company, and an electrical company and say, hey, mm-hmm. here's what I want you to do. You know, these guys don't necessarily have to work on the stadium, but it's about jobs, get employment, okay? Give that
yeah,
money
but here's the thing, though. The $700,000, Don, was negotiated and signed under contract law as regards to the stadium, okay? Now, that other piece, I mean, that's great that our yeah. leaders should have been negotiating that. You've identified a couple other big projects. In fact, we have a big state project going on over in St. Paul. That would have been
$90 million, yep.
Yeah, that would have been a way to go. We have the hub that is being built by the county, the kind of the Ackerberg Group and some others. That would have been another possibility. We've had numerous buildings being built downtown. We saw one just topped off here about 3 weeks ago that didn't have a single African-American working on it there across from XL Center. They're there on 4th and the Nicollet Mall. But in the case of what has happened with the stadium, I mean, we were all told that money was going to go for training. Of course, I had maintained that that's too late. Now, I do understand that Mr. Tittle is now saying that Mr. King and others must produce workers who were being trained back in 2009 and 2010 and 2011, which to me makes sense, that these are individuals that have necessary experience, prerequisite, and et cetera, and have accumulated, keyword, have accumulated the journeyman hours that you will need to work on this stadium. But I don't want to get away from right now 157 Caucasians are working on the outside of the stadium, preparing it for demolition, I guess, sometime in February. And so they're drawing stadium taxpayer money. 157 right now as we speak. And not a single African-American. And I just don't know how Mr. Tittle and others are going to explain that. Now, here's the thing. And I wish we could get a call from the senator, if you will. Anyone who knows the senator, you know, please reach out to him. Tell him our lines will be open for another 20 minutes. Mr. Tittle and the Sports Facility Authority will have to make a formal presentation on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, the 15th of January, to the Oversight Commission, co-chaired by State Senator Bobby Joe Champion. And in that presentation, they will have to give the numbers of how many people have been working from the second day of December 2013 to, let's say, the 11th or 12th of January. So we should be able to get a good feel for how many of our people have gone to work. Now, I'm being told that when the number of 2,500 was talked about this afternoon in a closed meeting, that Mr. Tittle indicated that number was extensive and that the number was to be much, much, much less than that. Now, I'm puzzled. I just don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I have no idea either. Again, those phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Go ahead and give us a call. We would love to hear from you. And you know, with the it's very interesting, but if you look at this, Mr. Edwards, on a broader scale, we know that there's approximately 91 million Americans are not in the workforce, and the number of American women without a job is like almost 357,000 just for the month of October. And so there's a wide gap, and the majority of these people, and this information all comes from Common Dreams, NPR, and a couple other credible sources. And the U.S. labor participation rate is at a 35-year low. Now, some of the right people on the right will blame this on the people on the left, or Obama in this case particularly, and they'll say that because of this current political infrastructure, this is why everything going down is going down the tubes. But I have to say, Mr. Edwards, and you keep bringing it up and making it a very evident that, you know, even if we did have some kind of political clout outside of that circle, we're dysfunctional. And are there people in the community that are working in their line of area expertise that have become dysfunctional and just irrelevant, you know, by their own doing? And so that's why we have no African-American representation in the political circles here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, other than Champion Hayden and Congressman Ellison and Rena Moran, State Representative Rena Moran. And so
out of
when
St.
you look
Paul.
At it,
yes,
out
yes,
of St. Paul.
Yes,
so
yes.
when you look at it like that, you see that, okay, this could either be a good time for a reset or else we're just going to go down the tubes. And after talking with that, I'm still here, Mr. Edwards, and be honest with you, if it sounds like I was a little distracted, is mm-hmm. I'm sitting here with these papers on the studio here over in Studio A reading this manual of branch election procedures and comparing it with what this wingnut said to us on the phone. And there's no way possible that they could have this meeting, this election.
Yeah, let me just tell you about seasoning, Don. You see, Mr. Jordan really should have said to us that he was in some kind of meeting or engagement and indicated to you that you would call him tomorrow and he would be able to answer any questions, but right now he was not available. You see, you never receive a call like that and try to bluff your way through. He was trying to figure out what the heck this was all about. It was poor strategy on his part. Of course, in the next, he'll be in contact with people like William English, if you will, or the monitors who met in his city and discussed this master plan and et cetera. But it's too late because, as you pointed out and very accurately, he has been recorded for you know, posterity. I mean, you know, for forever. As long as there is a tape, you know, we will have had the conversation involving William C. Jordan of Rochester, Minnesota, president of the Minnesota-Dakota State Conference, you know. But I have to say it, you know, kind of in defense of the brother. He really should not have he should have not taken your call.
No, that was a loaded call for him. And I mean, now, I mean, I have to, by duty, being a news person, I have to download that, edit it, put it on YouTube, and send it out to the NAACP National Branch. You know, I mean, it's my duty at this point because something stinks in Shangri-La here, and it needs to be straightened out because it's absolutely ridiculous. But, Mr. Edwards, this is a trend. It was something I want to bring up real quick while it's on my mind. When is the last time we've gotten a notice from the Minneapolis Urban League having a board meeting?
It's been about 3 years.
Thank you.
At least.
And so
at least.
We have the general community, and again, this is something that I need to position this because people come at you and I, Mr. Edwards, me online, you know, in little circles they have, you know, and they say that we're tearing down the community, that we shouldn't talk about this community baggage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, when in fact that if this stuff functioned correctly, then everything would be top of mind. It would be full disclosure. Then this little secret stuff wouldn't be going on. And we don't have any representation. We don't have anyone to chime in for us. I mean, the Minneapolis Urban League, I mean, that's basically just a building. You know, I got there at 8 o'clock this morning, dropped some flyers off for that diabetes thing, Mr. Edwards, and the only person in the parking lot was the guy shoveling the snow. And I remember years and years ago when you were running the place, if it was 8 o'clock, the doors was open and it was functioning. You know,
and it was functioning for probably almost an hour. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. But, so, you know, leadership and others said they didn't want that kind of operational competency. And so, you know, now the doors don't open at all. And if they do open, I don't know, maybe at 11 o'clock, maybe noon. I'm not sure. In fact, on a day like this here with the inclement weather in our beloved city, I don't know if there were any more than three people in the Urban League, you know, actually operating. You know what I mean? No, it's quite clear, but it's clear also, Don, the absence of calls on the line, et cetera. Folks really don't want to touch this. They want to pretend that everything is okay. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of conversations about the fact that the second woman in the history of the city of Minneapolis is now the mayor, and that things are going to change. Happy hate days are here again. Now, these are the same people I heard say exactly the same thing 12 years ago about a man named R.T. Ryback. Okay. And they were elated and happy that the first woman and first African-American mayor had just been defeated after two very, you know, fairly successful terms. And I'm just trying to figure out at what point we just come up honest with each other and kind of stand in front of the mayor and indicate that, you know, we just feel absolutely left out, you know what I mean? And we just don't have a clue of what's in store for us, if you will. But I don't know if that's gonna. I don't know if that's gonna happen. I just don't see the caller, gentleman from the South Side. You know, talked in terms. It's time for us to stand up. But I just don't know, Don, if we have the cane, if you will. If
yeah, we have a caller also, Mr.
Let's get the caller. Let's get the caller.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Who are you?
Hi. How are you tonight?
Wonderful. How are you?
Real good. What can we do for you?
I'm good.
What's your question?
I missed the first part of the show, but okay, so now what's going to happen with the election over there? Will it take place, or are they going to go against the bylaws? That's my first question, and then my second question is I'm a recent member of the NAACP. Do I have to have actually joined that branch at the time and attend a certain amount of meetings, or how does that work, Mr. Edwards?
Well, let me start from the back. If you are a member in good standing of the NAACP, obviously from another branch, is that outside the state of Minnesota?
No, actually, I am a 50-year resident here of Minneapolis, and I just recently joined probably a couple months ago. I just haven't really checked into the bylaws or anything
okay.
like that.
Okay. Have you received your membership card?
Yes, I have. I'm holding it in my hand right now.
Okay. Mm. Well, based on what was said in the letter of, actually the letter was November 12th, I actually made it a point to state a different date of one day, Mr. Allen, to see if Mr. Jordan picked up on it. He didn't. But, madam, to your specific question, given that you have a card, which would indicate that you are a member in good standing, that card is registered both in New York and in Baltimore at the NAACP's offices. So,
okay.
That shouldn't be a problem, but also because of the statement made by the state conference president on this program, there
yes.
should be a membership list there that should be as current as the 12th day of December, the day before the election. And so your name and number should be there. Okay. Now, to your first
okay.
question, will the election be held? I'm not sure that it's going to be because I think there's going to be problems with the director of branches of the Reverend Gail Ford. And I think it'll start with, you know, Mr. Jordan was kind of coy with us when he indicated that the quote-unquote regional director was somewhere in Iowa, you know, whatever that's supposed to mean. I hope he isn't stuck in a snowdrift. But my sense is, based on what Mr. Allen has received from Reverend Ford, and based on my own firsthand knowledge as a longtime member of the NAACP until expelled, if you will, a decade ago, I don't think that the election is going to take place.
Okay.
Do you think that
they're going to cancel it for, I mean, do you think that they'll go back and follow the bylaws and give the whatever they notice 2 months, I don't know what it is, 90 days?
I think they will have to, and I think they're going to have problems with the pastor of the church, the Reverend Jerry McAfee, who very well could deny them access and suggest they have it somewhere else. You know, Mr. Jordan went through an elaborate scenario in which he talked in terms of advance notification,
yeah.
et cetera. Yeah, I think he's going to have to do that. I just don't see the Reverend Jerry McAfee allowing that kind of fraud to take place in his church. Now, they can always find some place to have it, but I think that Reverend Ford and the membership of the leadership of the NAACP nationally will already have been through here.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Thank
and
you.
I hope that answers your question. First of all, you remember in good standing based on what you said. Secondly,
yes.
I think the election is going to be canceled or postponed.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, Mr. Mm-hmm. Oaks, we have another call. Thank you, ma'am, for calling.
Let's get the caller.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, you seem to bash the Jerry McAfee and the NAACP, but the fact of the matter is he's the best qualified soon-to-be president, sir.
Well, now, first of all, you really haven't been listening. We have not been bashing the Reverend McAfee. In fact, I just got through indicating that I think Reverend McAfee is going to take the high ground. Secondly, Reverend McAfee appears not to be a candidate for president. A man by the name of Nick Mohammed apparently was being positioned by very powerful white conservative forces. I just don't think that there's going to be an election. I think it's going to be postponed, and I think the Reverend Gail Ford, as I said, just said to the last caller, is going to come here, and he is going to take control of this election. I found it rather interesting. I don't know if you heard the conversation with Mr. Jordan of Rochester, Minnesota, but I think that the National is going to take a possession or control of the Minneapolis branch, and if there's any special election, the National NAACP will conduct it. And that's not the first time that's happened. So there's no bashing going on here as it pertains to the pastor whose church they were going to attempt to pull off this scam, because that's clearly what it is. Again, we would encourage you, if you did not catch the first part of the program, to go back on demand, listen to the entire program, and particularly the documentation that has been provided to us by Reverend Ford. It's just clear.
Are you a current member, sir?
I'm expelled, sir. I think said that just a couple minutes ago. I was expelled I was expelled for raising questions about the disappearance of over $1 million of money for Leave No Program Left Behind, which caused the minister who was involved in that, I think you know this, sir, to leave his pastorship and to leave this town, okay? But I paid a price for that. I was expelled for life.
Well, it doesn't seem like the NAACP or expel a member for raising questions.
Oh, I think they did, sir, particularly when the money was at the highest possible level. So to your question, you wouldn't think, but they did, you know, and the record is there, and, you know, one is free to look at it. But to your specific question, no, I'm not a member of the NAACP. At one time, I was a member in very good standing. Anything else?
I want to call it.
Go ahead.
I'm a member of the NAACP, and I will be, per their election procedures, I will be filing a notice of intent to run for any office that I choose here. I'll be doing that tomorrow morning, first thing. So,
well, what can you bring to the table, Mr. Allen?
What's that?
What can you bring
to
the table?
What would you bring to the table?
Oh,
integrity and honesty.
More than they have at the table right now.
Well, what's at the table right now?
Nothing.
Nothing. There's no president. There's no officers. If you'd have tuned in a little earlier, sir, there hasn't been a meeting of the branch in 10 months.
Well, I understand that, but you guys are, where you guys been the last 10 months?
On our side of the highway.
Okay, well,
Mr. Allen's
a member, and he doesn't seem to have any.
I've never gotten one notice, even when I was totally active in 2008 with Mr. Drain Reed. I've never gotten one email from them. I was a member of the Urban League. I never got one email from them telling me to this day, since 2008, saying when a meeting was or what was. The only people that have sent me emails to let me know when there's meetings is the Council on Black Minnesotans. That's been it.
Well, it seems like that. If there's checks cut, everybody's quiet then.
Exactly.
I don't know anything about that, so I don't know what checks you're talking about. I know $1 million worth of checks were cut behind Leave No Child Left Behind. I know that. And nobody said anything about that except me.
Yeah, you're pushing this diabetes thing here. Is there checks cut for diabetes in a black community?
If you would have listened at the beginning, Mr. Allen made a declaration of conflict of interest, quote unquote. I have no relationship whatsoever to any aspect of the diabetes issue.
And I'll be glad to explain that to you, sir. the Minnesota Department of Health, just real quickly here, granted some money out to a couple African-American agencies here in town at the beginning of the year.
Such as who?
Well, I don't want to get into the names because they're dealing with...
free. Come on now. Come on.
They're dealing with this on their end, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the accountability. But, sir, I'm going to tell you this. 15 days before today, the Minnesota Department of Health came to me, actually, for my company, my internet marketing company, and asked me would I put together an event for diabetes in North Minneapolis for the African-American community to get free food shot, flu shots, glucose testing, health and weight assessment, blood pressure. And I said, now, wait a minute. You just gave these people in North Minneapolis over $200,000 to do this all year.
Free flu shots. It's like the Tuskegee experiment, sir. Were you paid by that organization, sir?
No. Let me explain this to you. Flu shots.
Were you paid for? He answered the question. Were you paid to do it?
I'm answering the question, okay? Through my company, we got several organizations, including the free flu shots are for seniors and people that don't have insurance that are recommended to have the flu shot. Okay, this has nothing to do with a Tuskegee experiment or anything like that because I've heard no one talking about UROC in the last 5 years. But anyway, this thing is here is for my company was paid out of our pocket. We purchased the food. We purchased the decorations, the actual spot that we're renting, and wrote the press releases, did the graphic design, and our profit margin is less than 0.4%.
Well, sir, since we're being transparent, how much was your company paid, sir?
Way less than $100,000. I'll put it like
well,
that.
Well, can you give me a ballpark figure, sir?
We'll say about $1,500.
Oh, sir, come on. I mean, Natalie Johnson Lee spent way more than that on the cigarette campaign.
Okay, but I'm not Natalie Johnson Lee, and to explain this to you, if at the end of their grant, and I'll be really honest with you, sir, they had $5,000 left from this particular grant. That was it. And there's some other things that they still have to do. There's an event coming up in January. So I was not privileged to even talk about getting anything over a couple thousand dollars.
Well, did you go to the black churches and promote the event?
They have the individual that received the large amount of money said that he was handling all churches.
Well, seems like you don't like to name the name, sir.
Well, if you want to know the name, you can call me or email me offline at IBNN.
We're being transparent here, sir. You talk about transparency. Let's be transparent.
I've never said anything about transparency. I'm saying due process.
Mr. Edwards, don't you use the word transparency? I mean, is it fair to name the names of companies that got money?
Well, you know, that's between you and Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen has offered to provide the names to you offline, and then if you decide to repeat them, that's on you.
Well, sir, he called the guys from the NAACP and put them on blast. So, Mr. Allen, can't you reveal the names of the organizations received money, sir?
Let me ask this question of you, sir. Hold it just a minute, Mr. Allen, if you would. Let me ask this. If Mr. Allen was to go ahead and give you, I mean, what was that? What does that mean? What will you do?
Well, it seems like people in the community talk about who's getting money, but they fail to, you know, name names of individuals or organizations. I think it's just, you know, it just bugs me.
Okay, let's do this. The Stair Step Foundation is one of the organizations in North Minneapolis.
Now you have a name, sir. What yeah. Now what's your question after that?
Well, Reverend Bevington got money for years, sir. I mean, he's a poverty pimp. Who else is
Oh yeah, well see, I'm glad you said that because I'm not at liberty to say that because of and we're gonna keep going. Don't worry about the time because we're gonna continue to stream. But the thing is, you know, my question has always been, how do we get those millions of dollars that is given to these people that don't do the right thing for the community? This is the first event, sir. I'm sure you can agree with this. This is the first event of this magnitude that has happened in North Minneapolis all year, when in fact, people were paid to do these events every quarter this year.
Oh, really?
Yes. This is something that's supposed to be going on because diabetes is every 6 seconds, someone in the world falls dead because of complications around diabetes. In North Minneapolis,
Yeah, I understand that. It seems like they trained you well on that script to say that. But, you know, it's just the fact of the matter is, sir, people are getting paid for, you know, money for health and diabetes and cigarettes and marijuana testing and all this stuff. And it's going right in their pockets and living in Woodbury with pools in their fucking houses, you know?
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. But, caller, we thank you for your call.
We thank you, caller. Appreciate it. Get back to us again next Wednesday. We enjoy talking with you, sir. All right.
We have another caller.
All right, Ms. Allen, but it's the top of the hour. I'm going to have to break away.
We have one more caller, Mr. Edwards, if you want to take it.
All right, let's do this because I'm signaling to you from the studio. I'm going to have to switch phones, so you go ahead and get that caller in.
Okay.
I'll try to break back in.
All right, sounds good. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yes, I would like to call in and say that, you know, I really do appreciate your show because if we didn't have a show like yours, we wouldn't know what's going on in the dark. And for the last caller to call in, I think it's man enough for you to stop disguising your voice. Let us know who you are. Let us know who you work for, who you represent. What kind of puppet are you to call in to question people who are shining a light to what's going on behind our back? Our people are suffering. We're suffering in so many areas that I don't understand why would a person call in with these stupid voices. It makes no sense. I mean, can I do that? So
yeah,
I just really wanted to say that we have so many issues in our community that brother need to keep it real, Terrence.
Oh, you called his ass out. Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling, ma'am. I appreciate it. We will continue
to
do it. You're
so very welcome. And happy holidays, brother.
Happy holidays to you also. And with that said, we'd like to thank everybody for listening to On Point, and we are outie.
What you mad?